said, the guy'd never been stopped. And he just was very patient, and he knew when to really step on the accelerator, and then when he got him hurt, he did exactly what he had to do. But he was just very methodical. Really like that about guys. I mean, the real explosive guys are fun to watch, but I can appreciate those methodical guys as well. They tend to have a longer career. So, it's going to be interesting to see who's going to stop him. And I guess Thurman's still going to be out for a while, so that's why there's the talk of matching Porter and Garcia. We'll see how that goes. And that'll be good. I mean, I think that'll be an action fight because both those guys like to bring it.
Yep.
Can you hear me now?
Speaking of that division, I want to break down and get your thoughts on what we saw last week between Garcia and Broner. And it didn't end in a stoppage like I thought it would, but I think that was because Broner wouldn't allow it. I don't think he committed enough of himself for Garcia to be open enough for Garcia to really catch him clean.
And you wonder what that says about Broner's mindset, because, you know, he did not seem like he was too upset about what happened.
No, not until they were interviewing him, and basically Jim Gray kind of inferred that he was, you know, a stepping stone now. And then he got pissed off.
Mm-hmm. The time to not be a stepping stone is when you're halfway through the that fight that's going to put you in that category, and you're not stepping on the accelerator. And maybe he just figures that he's such an outstanding villain, and we do need villains. And
no, I'm
good at that. You know? But that's really no way to run a career, I don't think. I mean, I don't like giving advice, but, you know. Yeah, but I tell you,
Well, I was going to say, when you talk about the villain, a couple of years ago, when Fernando Vargas was still fighting and Mayorga was, you know, still out there. And Mayorga at the time, you know, he was losing to most of the top guys, the Dennis Hoyes of the world, the Shane Moses of the world, Tito Trinidad. This was after he had the two big wins over Vernon Forrest. He was fighting Fernando Vargas, and Mayorga got the win. You know, it was a decision win, but he got the win. And the one Boxing magazine even said it best, because every so often, the villain has to win, you know? Almost like in wrestling. You know, the villain has to win from time to time to keep his heat. Now, granted, this wasn't a, you know, a staged event, but so in mind, if Mayor was, he would have then been a stepping stone, but he wouldn't have had that same public attraction as the villain. Does he get whipped? Because he's been whipped so many times.
You know, for some reason, you're tickling my brain with this, because he never really touched that button with me. You know, I mean, yeah, I know, he was crude, he was classless, but there was, I just never really had a horrible feeling. I mean,
and he might be the one to me, he like invite you to hit him on the chin a few times. I think that was one of his best performances. Yeah, you're right. No, Mayorga never really pushed as many of those buttons with me. I enjoyed watching them because I found them entertaining. Guys that really were able to push my buttons, and I know I've always mentioned Hector Camacho, you know, because I always felt, you know, he used a macho name, but he was more of a showman than anything, and, you know, more of a shit talker, but more of a runner at the same time.
Yeah.
He pushed my buttons at the time. Another guy that pushed my buttons, Prince Nazim Hamed. I was talking about him today, and I'm going to actually categorize him and Broner together, and I'm going to tell you how. Now, Hamed used to push me like you wouldn't believe because of the way he would show up an opponent. You know what? Hey, you can be, hey, you're in the ring to beat the guy, and I understand that. And when you do something, hey, of course, it's something to be celebrated. You know, it's, hey, boxing's a great sport of yours. But when you put a guy down, you stand over him and you make faces at him, or you stick your chin out at him, and things like that, and then you have the stupid ring entrances with the, you know, the magic carpet and all that, but you're trying to embarrass your opponent, that I really have a hard time with. And that was what his whole thing was. He would get in there and he would run his mouth and really do, you know, put his opponents down. He wasn't like he was trying to hype a fight. He was putting someone down. And then he would show him up when he beat him. So, was I glad tonight Marco Antonio Barrera slapped him around? Oh, I definitely was. But I even said this to a guy today. Just today I said this. I said, he was lucky that he got a little bit past his prime. Barrera in there, still a great fighter, but a little past his prime. Than getting a young Mayweather. Because young Mayweather at the time, you know, before he became more of a defensive, you know, master at 130 pounds, was knocking a lot of guys out. And he would have hit Hamed out, and he would have hit him with right hands all night. And he would have knocked him out. And I believe that to this day. The other guy is buttons, you know, like you wouldn't believe, just because he comes out there with the hair brushing. Hey, there's things about being entertaining and all that, and I appreciate that. But then when it comes time to put up or shut up, he doesn't put up. But he still don't shut up.
Yeah. He's just a congenital trash talker, and the kind of guy that, you know, could be a dangerous guy to meet on the street. The kind of guy that is anything but a role model. And, I mean, I don't want to get on that, because, everyone can't be a perfect role model, a perfect human being. I mean, fighters are human beings first before they're fighters. But this guy is just, there just doesn't seem to be anything redeemable as a fight in the bowling alley. I mean, just nonsense like that. Stupid.
Yeah.
Classic.
Yeah.
That would be the word.
And you have kids look up to him. They want to emulate him.
And it would still come down to, you know, like I said, if you can back that up when things aren't going your way in the ring.
Yes.
Shows a lot about character right there. And hasn't shown. Well, look at the Prince. Look what happened to him with one defeat. See him.
He came back. He fought some bum. You know, he didn't even knock him out. He beat him by decision, and he quit. You know what the classic word I use for Broner? I used it last week before the fight happened, and I actually used the same word for Hamed. It's front-runner. Classic front-runner.
Yeah.
You know, when things are going your way, you know, it's great. I'm on top of the world. But when things get a little bit hard, you fold. That's a front runner. You know, that's like the kid that, you know, grew up in Philadelphia. Trust me, we've had our hard share of, you know, sports. Well, Cleveland, you know, the same thing. So, you know, especially with our Eagles. Hey, growing up an Eagle fan, not easy. Not easy. And then, I have a book about it, and it's like about the kids in the neighborhood always want to be Cowboys fans because they were the kids that, you know, like to be like the smart ass little one and start the trouble. I'm a Cowboys fan. We beat you. I'm like, you didn't beat me. You ain't never beat me.
Yeah,
you ain't gonna beat me.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, like you're on the team. That's stupid.
we have five Super Bowl rings. How many do you have? I said, I have none, just like you, because I never played a down in the NFL.
You
have five rings? What position do you play?
Oh, man.
Yeah. You must be really good. Yeah. I'd love to see it. Can I see the ring? I'd like to see your ring. Yeah. Your ring.
Yeah, you ain't got shit. You're a front runner.
And I had a guy neighbor I grew up with, a classic front runner. Whatever was hot at the time is what he wanted to be. You know? If a movie came out, that was like the kind of style he wanted to emulate. He was a white Italian kid. Malcolm X came out, and that was the big thing. Boys in the Hood came out. He was black for a while. But then Goodfellas came out. Well, he then became a mafia guy. Jesus Christ. But we were watching a game together one time, and he was a diehard food. Joe Montana and Jerry Rice and all those guys, when they had the Super Bowls, in mid-game, when it looked like, when it proved that they were going to lose that game to the Cowboys, he became a diehard Cowboys fan. In mid-game.
But you know something good about that, Tony? What does that tell you about his lack of character?
Yeah, exactly.
Because, right. You know, that's like around here, and I don't get much ball talk because I just had to tap out on that decades ago, but, you know, there's still these folks that want to talk some about sports, and some of them are still sports fans. what can you say? I mean, it's just this whole front-running syndrome. I mean, and it just seems like, and I try to look at the person, not just with their sports fan stuff, because like I said, I'm not into much besides the stuff we talk about here every week. But what does that tell you about them? And then I would imagine, even in that division, if all of a sudden the Bengals would be on top for decades, that's where these folks would be there if the Browns would ever come back. Mm-hmm. And you see what I mean? And it just says a lot. And that was the thing about Muhammad Ali, that no matter what you thought of him, he showed character in that loss to Joe Frazier. A lot of fighters back then just could not withstand what Frazier was bringing, and you can see why. I mean, Joe Frazier was an oncoming train. I mean, you're getting a million punches around, and none of them are going to tickle. And he's coming at you, You can hit him, and he's going to come at you. And you hit him harder, he's going to hit you harder back. He's going to get madder and just keep going, you know? And Ali somehow took that. And I was wondering back then, how would he react? Well, actions speak louder than words. He was humbled, and he came back, got on another winning streak, and there was the history. Came back and won the other two, and so like I said, regardless of what you think of him, at least he could back it up. And that says a lot about character. But you're right with Berner. I mean, and it's those guys that don't have that kind of character. It's like, wow, what has to happen to you? You know, how many guys do you have to get beat? What is ever going to give you some degree of humility and some degree of sportsmanship? And you're just not seeing it with these guys, a lot of them. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, and, you know, and that's like, you know, Garcia was so technically sound, he didn't make mistakes in there. That is a well-schooled fighter. You know, we're not giving Garcia enough credit here. You're talking about Berner and being the front runner, and, you know, but Garcia came out there, he had a game plan, he executed it, you know, he used a very intelligent jab, brought it right back to his face. When Berner kept a tight defense, he looped his rights around the side of the head, so it might not have been, say, knockout punches, because they weren't going to catch him on the chin or anything, but, you know, they didn't tickle, as you would say. You know, when Berner kept the guard high, he dug the body well, and he rarely let openings. I mean, Berner landed a few good shots in the last three or four rounds. You know, he bloodied Garcia's nose up. I thought he definitely, maybe stunned him a little bit with some of them body punches in there, but at no point did Garcia ever lose composure. That's a guy that when the going gets tough in there, you know that he's a high character guy. He comes from a high character family, boxing's in his blood, and no matter what happens in there, you know you're you're going to get an A-plus effort inside and outside of the ring.
And a very high fight IQ. You know, mental stuff just keeps coming in, because that's where these mistakes happen, is when your emotions take charge, and then the plan goes out the window. There ain't no plan. Well, how does that work out for most guys? Not too good. I mean, one mistake and it's over. I mean, that's where it's a little different than any other sport. I mean, most of the time, unless it's a grand slam home run in the ninth inning, I mean, a pitcher can give up, you know, throw a bad pitch and still win the game. But one serious mistake in a fight, and good night.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you've got to be poisoned. That's what I like about Garcia so much. I mean, just seem like he just so together. Just so together as you know, always got the right mental approach. Yeah, and you know, sometimes it's a really good point. We tend to look at the loser and say, well, what did he do wrong? Well, maybe he did the best he could. Maybe it was just there was nothing else he could have done.
Right.
And it's a very good point. And sometimes we just point our finger too quick at the loser, but hey, maybe it was just a great effort by Mikey. And so, like I said, he said he's probably going to stay at 135, but he said he's going to entertain offers. He's in that right weight range, and he said he wouldn't consider for the right situation going up to 147. Boy, how interesting would that be? I still think he has a bit of work to do down where he's at.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, you know, there's even talk now with Lomachenko. He's fighting Saturday night. Were you aware of that?
I was not.
Okay,
I knew he was fighting. Okay, even better.
Saturday night at 10 o'clock. I mean, he's a Matrix fighter and all this stuff. He's fascinating to watch. But there's still that question. Has he really been put to the test? And, him and Garcia down the road. What do you think?
I wouldn't complain on that. That would be a great fight, you know. It would be like the unique kind of unorthodox, quote-unquote, Matrix offense of Lomachenko versus that steady, well-schooled, high boxing IQ of Garcia. You know, just two absolutely world-class fighters in there with contrasting styles. And I think that would be a very interesting fight. I'd pay to see that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that would just be... And that would be one of those fights that I would just not be that emotional about. It's just, wow, let's just sit back and enjoy.
There's lots of good fights. Yeah.
And may the best man win, and let's just sit back and watch this sport at the highest levels. The chess match, and it could easily happen down the road, because Lomachenko, I know, it's another one of these fights Saturday night that he's supposed to win, but there's already a little grumbling. And I want to say, well, come on, guys, what is this? It'd be his 10th pro fight. But let's, I know his amateur pedigree is off the charts and accomplishments and all that, but, it's about that time. You know, let's really get to the highest levels and see what happens. It'd be interesting to see if he ever moves up.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was getting into his training camp a bit. And very intelligent guy, Lomachenko. He uses quite a cerebral approach, but, you know, you get on YouTube and see those, like his five best efforts or, you know, 10 reasons why he's so special. And then they break a lot of this stuff down. And he does have that great economy of movement. That's just so important for cardio, because you notice it with unskilled guys, how they'll just come out and just bang a bang a bang and just blow their wad in the first couple rounds and there's nothing left. I mean, it's, and I'm sure you've encountered guys like that. I mean, in my days, I could, you know, I mean, I just realized, okay, well, if I just cover up and stay away from some of these, you know, I mean, even though I'm in the arm punch, you're still, you know, and the guy's throwing. I mean, it doesn't hurt. It hurts to get hit regardless. But if you can just hang on, by halfway through the first round, some of these guys are shot. And that's so important, that economy of movement. And Lomachenko just, because, you know, I've got a friend who's one of my personal training clients. Well, he's also an engineer, and he wasn't much into this stuff, but I get him into it more. And, you know, I just said, put your engineer brain on. Like, I sent him a thing on Lomachenko. I said, put your engineer brain on. Think of the physics of this, and think of the geometric angles. I mean, there's so much of that stuff there, and I know I sound nerdy when I talk about that, but for this guy's birthday, I got him a book on the physics of fighting. So, yeah, Lomachenko is interesting. So, yeah, so this will be a freebie for Saturday night. So, if you're not out and about, check it out. If you're out and about, record it.
I love how they're, you know, giving us some high-quality Saturday night shows on, you know, your ESPN channels again, or your, you know, your Fox Sports, your FS1s, your AT Sports. So, you know, for the people that say boxing's dead, you know, I'm sorry. I disagree.
Right, and especially with the trend that we're having now, and again, that's where, with this whole McGregor thing, I don't think it's going to hurt boxing, even if McGregor puts on a much better effort than we think he's going to. I mean, the thing that's exciting to me about this is it's making boxing water cooler talk again. And that hasn't happened in a long time, and it's just... And again, I have to contrast the television coverage now from what it was back in the 80s. And I know you were awful young for that stuff, but you can ask your dad about it. I mean, it was just every Saturday afternoon. Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon, a lot of those daytime fights back then.
Yeah. I remember sitting, you know, watching a lot of them with him, you know?
Yeah. And that's how you get the exposure. You know, it's like Max Kellerman was giving this analogy. I don't know if I mentioned this last week, but it was so apt. Like he says, you know, you get to a street corner, you know, to try to explain the lure of fighting. You get to a street corner and say on, and there's four different activities going on. So you've got on one, there's basketball. And maybe you even have the two best guys in the NBA going one-on-one with each other, you know, the bottom Durant or something like that, you know. And then on one corner, you've got either a long drive competition or a putting competition with the two best golfers in the world. Then another corner, you've got J.J. Watt trying to go after Tom Brady in some first, you know what I mean? But then on the fourth corner, you got a fight. Most people are going to be attracted to the fight. And when they're not, it's maybe they don't have a connection with the fighters. But when they get that personal connection, yeah, they're definitely going to be going to the fight. And that's where we had that in the 80s, because you've seen these guys so much. We knew what Ray Mancini's story was, because when people heard it, it was addictive. And, my God, how could you not be fascinated by what Ray Mancini was trying to do for his dad? I mean, if that doesn't move your emotions, I think you're a robot.
I mean, like, even, like, some of the things, just, I remember, like, even when I was hitting, like, the 13, 14 year old, like, you know, 90, 91, maybe 92, when they still have, you know, fight cards on Saturday and Sunday afternoons, but very infrequently instead of every week like they used to. I remember, you know, long before the days of digital TVs and, you know, the crazy cable boxes and stuff like that, where you actually had to use a TV guide, my TV guide would come every Tuesday. And I remember as soon as I would get home from school, the first thing I would do is I would go to the Saturday sports and the Sunday sports. I'm like, okay, you know, we got, say it was October, you know, 15th, okay, you know, we got, you know, college football, you know, on ESPN, and blah, 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 college football on this channel, college football. I'm like, come on. And then it's like, okay, we got, you know, maybe some NHL, you know, Flyers game on this channel. Like, you got, you know, the Sixers playing. I'm like, come on. I'm like, no boxing. Son of a bitch. Sunday, okay, we got the NFL game. Blah, 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 blah. No boxing. Son of a bitch. And it was like, but then a lot of times, you know, because in the summer, you know, you play that basketball. Especially then, they didn't have the summer leagues and stuff like they do now. You had no hockey. You had no football. All you had was baseball. So it was like, okay, we got water polo on. Oh, beautiful. Okay, we got the PGA tournament on. Who gives a shit? We got the, you know, Wimbledon tennis. Don't give a crap. Holy shit, we got boxing. You know, it could be like someone's like, it's Wimbledon versus, you know, World Star. Like, oh my God, this is great. No, it wasn't. It was a fight with a dud. You know, but I didn't care. They had boxing on, and it was a championship fight, and I was going to watch it. That's what it was.
Yeah, and like I said, especially when we got to make that connection with the fighters, because it was we, like I said, we had our villains back then, and you know, I like we were using that criteria. Well, I will say about Larry Holmes, he did have the wherewithal to come back from adversity. But it was a lot of that. You know, we don't need to get on this outside of the ring stuff. I don't want to keep, you know, I think we beat a dead horse on that. But I remember, even back in the, shortly after winning the title, he just seemed like he just had this chip on his shoulders, you know? And going into that Ernie Shavers fight, the first one, boy, he was doing so good. Then in the seventh round, there was that right hand from hell. And I'll give Holmes credit. I know you've probably seen that. And I remember him starting to get off the floor, and it was almost like, you know, one of the drunks in the neighborhood bars around here. A lot of alcoholics in this area. And, you know, sometimes they'll get off the bar stool, and they're kind of plunging forward on their own momentum and running into the post near the center of the bar. You know, some of these places are real bars like that. You know, it's not the kind of place where they tell intoxicated patrons, you got to get out of there. You know, it's not like that with some of these neighborhood places. But that's what Holmes was like. Ran right into the corner, right into the ring post, and slumped down again. And I kept thinking, that's got to be it. Pretty Shavers hit hard. But he persevered through a lot of things like that. His button with me was just that surly, nasty. I just couldn't put a finger on it. But and then I guess, you know, I know we've talked about this too. But then the final straw was just before that first Spence fight, that jockstrap comment.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I understand saying things when you're mad, and you know, but you know what, I had, you know, met him years later, and the first time I met him, of course, I'm wearing a Rocky Marciano t-shirt, not thinking, and I go, you know, my neighbor and his brother-in-law went up for a picture, and took the picture, and I go, yeah, can I get one? He kind of sneered, like, yeah, make it quick, and I'm like, okay, that's kind of a dick move, but fine, I sit down, and I, you know, do whatever, and he's kind of looking at the pictures, that was a snarl on his face, and I'm like, and then this is back before I had a digital camera, so I get the pictures back the next day, because that was the end of my role, and I'm like, oh, Christ, what the hell was I wearing? No wonder he was pissed off. And then a couple of years, that was maybe 2003 maybe. A couple of years later, when I was working with the pest control company, managing a lot of the technician schedules, we got his restaurant in Easton, and we had our one technician was down there, so I was dealing a lot with his operations manager, and I don't remember her name. So the one day I had to make a call, like, hey, the courtesy call, I know we've been doing you guys for 3 months now, how's everything going? Well, he answered the phone, and he's like, some bugs are biting me. And I'm like, and he's like, I'm just messing with you. I said, is this the champ? Yeah. So I started talking to him, and I'm like, you know what, he really came off as pretty nice there. But as Rich will tell you, he really impressed us all with that Marciano statue dedication. The fact that he was there, we were kind of shocked. You know, oh my God, he's going to be there. And then it was like, how is the crowd going to receive him, you know? Because, you know, hey, you're the guy's hometown, and there had to be some lingering bitterness. You know, it was just a fact, you know? I mean, so...
How could there not be? Come on. How could there not be?
But the one thing I remember writing in my post-event little write-up was, maybe it's true that time does heal all wounds. Because as soon as he came in and they were in their seats and they were introducing, because the people that were coming in, like a lot of the guests of honor, like schlubs like me and Rich, we just, you know, went in and, you know, got in the bleachers. But then a lot of the guests of honor were coming in, the Mickey Wards, the John Ruizes, the Don Kings, Jose Suleiman. They were the people that Vinny Paz, they were the people that were sitting up, you know, front in the chairs. And, you know, Larry and all of them were already seated by that time, because I got his picture when he was coming in. And then the Marciano family was coming in, and the first thing Rocky's brother Peter did was actually walk over to Larry and give him a big hug. And Larry stood up, and you could see, so I got a picture of the moment as it's happening, and Larry's back was facing me, but Peter's was kind of coming, facing towards me. And the genuine look on his face, I said, this is not a photo op, you know, a setup. This is not like a, okay, let's do our, you know, like our stare down photo here for a boxing match or whatever. This was a genuine moment between two guys that had long buried the hatchet, and they had a very warm embrace, and then Larry got up to talk. You know, Don King got up, and he was funny. Jose Suleiman got up, and he was funny. And Larry got up, and he goes, you know what? 30 years ago, I said something, and I regret it, you know? And he goes, you have to understand, we're fighters. We're very competitive people. And in the heat of the moment, you say things, and you regret them. And he goes, I'm just happy right now that we're able to put this past us. And he goes, you got to understand, hey, I'm a fighter. I'll whip anybody's ass. You ask me, if you ask a real fighter worth his salt, ain't nobody going to be able to beat me. He goes, I kick Godzilla's ass. You know? And he said that, and he was genuine. And he told the people, he goes, and afterwards, he's like, I'm glad you people, you know, are here, and I'm glad to be here. And he goes, afterwards, you know, if we all meet up at, like, the restaurant or whatever, because they were going to have, like, the post-party, he goes, I'll be there singing and entertaining. And I didn't get to go, Rich did. But they said he was true to his word, and even the Brockton papers wrote about it, that he really was, like, the entertainment of everybody, and he really showed the charisma that he didn't show all them years ago. Maybe he couldn't better do that. And, you know, and that's a funny thing. And, you know, in life, you know, sometimes when you are at such a high pinnacle position, sometimes the pressure does get on you. And the fact that, you know, coming after a guy, or coming after not just Ali, but the era of the Ali and the Frazier and the Foreman and the Norton and all those guys, and the fact that people hated him for beating Ali, that wasn't his fault. Now, I was arguing with the guy.
Yeah, that was way out of line.
Yeah, I was arguing with a guy, a guy that I know who's very, he's a good friend of mine, but he's very opinionated, and if he doesn't like somebody, they can do no right. Hates Manny Pacquiao. So no matter what Pacquiao does is, you know, he's terrible. But he loves so-and-so, no matter what they do is great. Fine. And, you know, okay, whatever. But he was out there saying, it's a shame that nobody gives Larry Holmes credit for beating Muhammad Ali, but they want to, you know, clown Rocky Marciano for beating, you know, an old Joe Louis and an old Jersey Joe Walcott and an old Archie Moore. But then it's like, and people were blasting him on this one and said, Ali was a shell of himself, hadn't fought in 2 years, and did nothing in that fight. Holmes deserved no credit for that, you know? It was like hitting a punching bag. Joe Louis was past his prime, but he was still an active fighter. Rocky didn't want to fight him, but he knew Joe needed the money, so he did it as a favor to him. Oh, this guy also said that Rocky retired, you know, to avoid to duck Floyd Patterson, and I thought that was laughable.
Oh, come on. I remember what Rocky said about the most... ...classics. I can't even think of the name of it. Rocky was the host. I've never seen it. And people that... And like he said, he's in the room and he said, Joe Lewis is coming in like what? Came when Chief, when I was a kid, I used to listen to him on the radio. Now he's coming here to fight me. You know, it was like kind of surrealistic, but hey, you can't blame Ollie. You can't blame Holmes for the Ollie thing. What was he supposed to do? To me, in one sense, it's almost be an honor. To measure yourself against your idol, even though your idol's not in his prime anymore. But, I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, that's just crazy. And then I think part of the chip on Holmes' shoulder was the whole Cooney fight was just so much bigger than boxing. I mean, it just turned into a gigantic racial situation, open racial. And Cooney, you know, kept trying to downplay that. He said, I'm just in here to fight. I'm not here to represent a race or a cause or anything like that. And, you know, here Holmes coming to the ring with Jesse Jackson. Throwing the circus. So, you know, I mean, I understand Holmes had big shoes to fill. And then a year or two later, here comes Mike Tyson stealing the thunder. Well, now we finally got a real champ, you know. After all, he left. Now we got a new era. And, you know, I'm sure Holmes had to think, what about me? What about me? I mean, I fought everyone, so... Oh, Sam, I do think age kind of mellows people out. I mean, you know, it has with me a lot. Sometimes you say stuff when you're young. And if I remember right, this was when he said that jockstrap comment, I believe that was right before he lost to Michael Spinks, wasn't it?
No, it was right after he lost, when he's
48
years.
Okay.
Yeah, it was after.
Because for some reason I had thought it was early. Yeah, so I see his frustration with that, because that had to be an awful frustrating night for Holmes, because looking at history, no light heavyweight had ever blown up to the heavyweight level and walked away with the belt from a champ. I mean, who wanted to be the first to lose the belt to a light heavyweight? That's crazy. And, you know, Michael Spinks back then was, someone described him, it's like trying to hit a wiffle ball. It's like trying to bite into cotton candy. It's like invading China, you know. He's here, he's not here. I mean, it was a tough fight for Holmes.
I feel a little frustrated. But. Jokey style, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, he sure did. And so I could see how he was going
to jump on him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that was the only way to do it. But it was easier said than done with Michael Spinks. And then Holmes losing the rematch. Well, that really had to send him into the Twilight Zone, you know? Oh, the frustration. But, the way it shakes out. But, yeah, so it is, like you said, it is good that stuff's all behind him. But, it was never my favorite then, but I mean now I don't have the same feeling now, but back then, you know, it was different. You know, some people kind of looked at Duran as the bad guy in some circles, but Duran to me was, you know, back in those days, I mean, I remember him from the 70s, and he was just, to me, everything a fighter should have been. I mean, he's just coming after you. He makes no excuses. He's very aggressive. He's a whirlwind, and man, he's exciting. But I know he had his detractors.
Well, yeah, like said, Duran, he loved playing the villain, but you know, I think like a true fight connoisseur, you know, would appreciate him. Because of his skill, but his almost like his snarl. He was, you know, he had that mean streak to him, you know. He was a guy that's like, oh my God, I'm going to watch this guy, you know, because it's like, it's just so entertaining to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's if you like action, and if you like unpredictability, and if you just like that bit of wild savagery, that he's not a completely civilized human being at times. You know, he did that like it at times. But this is an entertainment business. I mean, it's just, and some guys, well, it's just like the, I know you don't follow the UFC much, but we had a title fight last Saturday night that went the distance. And it was a real, well, let's just say, I'll be respectful about it, it was not a barn burner. We had two stylists that just didn't match up. And the champ didn't want to go to the ground against a high-level, probably the best jiu-jitsu guy in the UFC now. I mean, just high-level submissions. If you guess you want to ground, you're in trouble. Well, the champ didn't want to go to the ground. So he was able to keep the fight standing, and the jiu-jitsu guy really didn't have the stand-up ability to make it interesting on the feet. So it just turned into a snooze fest. So now the welterweight champ is aced out of a comeback fight with George St. Pierre. But it's an entertainment business, Tony. You know?
Yeah.
Sorry, but that's the way it is. I mean, that's why we're still talking about Arturo Getty and Mickey Ward.
Yeah.
And we will be 20 years from now. And I don't think there'll be a lot of people talking about even Mayweather. I mean, maybe with this, it'll be a name, but there won't be that same excitement, the same blood and guts. I mean, man, you know, these guys are coming in, and look out, anything can happen. These guys are going for it. And if they're fighting, I'm watching. And the safety first guys just don't instill that kind of excitement.
Yeah, true.
You know, it's just the way it's always been. Is now and where it probably always will be. Well, it's 10 o'clock. I guess we're probably done for the night, huh?
Yeah. I sent us an email at 9 p.m. Just opening it now. See what he said. Hi guys, something's at my website. I can hear and record you guys if you want, but I won't be able to get on the microphone or the set up. Okay, I'll respond to him. I don't know if he had you on it. No, no copy on it. Okay.
I guess I could go get by the computer and check out my stuff here.
Okay.
Oh, Renan, shut us down, huh? A lot of stuff to cover tonight, too, but...
Yeah, we went around things. I heard before we part ways for the evening, as I was saying the other night when I was pulling up, just about to leave the gym, my one friend Joe, who grew up literally right down the street from me, and he and I have been friends for, you know, almost 30 years now. First of all, he one day asked me, hey, first of all, what'd you think of the Brona fight? And I told him, you know, just like I broke down on the show. Then he came out and said, hey, so look at the Paulie Malignaggi's black eye. You see Malignaggi have a black eye? And one thing wouldn't surprise me if they said, here, Paul, here's a couple of grand. Let him hit you with a few shots on the eye, give you a shiner, and then you go on there and say, yeah, he is hard, you know, because that'll sell, you know. So then the other thing he said is, because I know you don't really watch a lot of the UFC fights, he goes, did you hear John Jones kind of call out Brock Lesnar? I said, yeah. Hear that, and so John Jones, who weighs 205, wants to call out Brock Lesnar, who would come in around 275, who's like basically, you know, if John Jones at any point, because like, hey, if you're in a boxing match, like the one time when I was 178 and they asked me to fight this guy that was 265. Yeah, I was going to do it, and the coach said no. You know, and I'm like, coach, listen, he's big, but he's slow. You know, he's not in shape. You know, let me just putz around him for a minute, and then I'll take it to him. You know, and we're like, and the coach's like, no, you're not giving up 87 pounds. Another time, I sparred guys, like when I was 178, 180. I sparred a guy that was, on our football team at Lock Haven. Wasn't a good boxer, but he was a big, strong guy, 230 pounds. You know, I've gotten close to him, and I let him swing away, blocked his shots, countered him. A guy 50 pounds lighter than him dropped him, one right hand. You know? But if that was a grappling match with either one of those two, I'd be screwed, because I'm an in-close kind of guy. I'd be screwed. Because once I got in close to those big monsters, I'm strong, but not when I'm giving up 50 to 87 pounds. If John Jones is giving up 70 pounds, and he gets on the ground with Brock Lesnar, get out of here. You're
It's going to be hard, regardless of the scale of them. I mean, and I've rolled with guys that, in fact, there was one that I was giving up almost 100 pounds to. And it's just, don't tell me what it doesn't mean things. That's why we have
I know I'm going back 100 years and everything, but what happened when Stanley Ketchel fought Jack Johnson?
Yeah. I mean, there's only so much you can overcome, and Stanley Ketchel had so much going for him, but couldn't make up for that weight.
Exactly. I just got an email from Rich. He said, keep it going for a few minutes. He's got us recording. Rich, if you can hear me, what else do you want me to touch base on? What didn't you get? Did you not get any of the Broner fight? Did you not get any of, what we think of Lomachenko possibly fighting Garcia? You tell me, and we'll wrap it up in the next few minutes.
Oh, jeez.
But, yeah, Tom, you're right. Because even when you go back to, and this was one that, there was a size disadvantage, but he felt smart, was Sugar Ray Leonard, natural welterweight, when he was fighting more physical. And he was going to be in a lot of trouble. So he used a lot of his footwork, a lot of movement outside, and he used, a lot of flurries in there, even stealing rounds. But if he would have tried to stay toe-to-toe with Marvin Hagler, started happening in later rounds, and Hagler was starting to take it to him a little bit, and people ask me what type of shot and older and got heavier, especially when he was fighting at heavyweight, became a very lazy fighter in there. Great skills, great IQ, fantastic counterpuncher, but the fact is he used to like to lay on the ropes, he used to like to fight body on body and pick his inside counter shots. I said, that's not going to work, when a guy can take him down.
Yeah.
Because for Jones to win this fight, he's going to have to stay on the outside and fire one-twos at the guy coming in. One-two, pivot, double jab, left uppercut, right hand, and then stuff like that. Punches, counter punches, but don't let that guy get his hands on you. Great line in Rocky III. When Rocky was doing the celebrity match with Thunder Lips, a.k.a. Hulk Hogan, and they were asking the announcers, they're supposed to be like wrestling, supposed to be like it was real and all this, but they're like, the wrestler versus the boxer, once the wrestler gets that hands on, those big guys, like this guy's a giant, once he gets those hands on you, it's all over. But, when you come to a guy like Brock Lesnar, who is a legitimate NCAA champion, he's a legitimate, Ultimate Fighting champion at 275 pounds, and he's a physical specimen. I've watched videos of the guy's workout. The guy's a physical specimen. To beat him, you either have to be on his strength level to be able, you can take him down and like pump him. I think it was like Alistair Overeem was able to do that,
him in a submission, Frank Mir did.
Overeem caught it with a body kick.
Okay.
And that started Brock's downfall.
Yeah. So, but, you know, for a guy that's going to, you know, try to stand in there toe-to-toe and giving up 70 pounds? Nah. Oh, no. Don't think it's going to work.
Yeah. No. Well, we'll see how things shake out.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we've covered as much as we're going to tonight. So, we'll check out.
Oh, absolutely will do. You know, that's the part you know, he's fun to watch. He makes watching boxing fun. You know, I know a lot of people aren't fans of him, maybe because they haven't seen enough of him yet, but hey, that's the guy I pay to watch, like, and the fact that I'm getting on the ESPN 3, cool with that.
Exactly, and that's what. You know, my engineer, buddy, he can appreciate all this little technical stuff. I mean, he's not a super emotional guy about fighting like, you know, me and you can be. But he's also anxious to learn and really be a student of it like we are, too. So, that'll be good. So, all right, take detailed notes on it, and I guess we'll be touching bases next week, huh?
Actually, this weekend, because I'm excited about it, and this is unprecedented. I'm already going to start working on the preview article for Mayweather McGregor. I'm getting too many strong vibes right now. It's already starting to write itself in my head when I'm driving home from work and everything, and I'm like, I got to start putting in the old-fashioned terms, pen to paper, but really fingers to keyboard.
Well, and don't forget too, you're going to have plenty of work in September with Triple G and Canelo.
Absolutely.
So the McGregor situation will be a good warm up for that, because you got to lay out the action on that one too. I'm playing that in my mind, and right now it just seems like Canelo's going to. I mean, his boxing skills are really going to be put to the test tonight. Don't know if they can last for 12 rounds. But, yeah, I'm sure we'll be taking a lot of information and get it right. So, all right, bud, this has been great, and we will be talking to you next week, and let's enjoy the fights Saturday night, all right?
Fantastic. You do as well.
All right, buddy.
Bye.